Hey, listeners. I'm Karen Riley Jeffers, NCSM's Eastern 2 Director. Welcome to our series, Learning with Leaders, Everyone Belongs in Mathematics. Thank you for joining me and my co-host, Abel Maestas, the host of Teaching That Counts, as we talk with both leaders and influencers about their math journeys and contributions. Today, we will hear from our special guests about their inspiration, perceptions, and insights regarding instructional decisions that make the mathematics space welcoming and engaging to all. Listen and learn about how beliefs, practices, and policies must continue to advance to ensure that each and every person feels a sense of belonging in mathematics.
All right. Welcome, everybody, to the Learning with Leaders podcast, NCSM's very own podcast. And this is the Everyone Belongs in Mathematics series. And I am one of two co-hosts, Abel Maestas, and we also have
Karen Riley Jeffers.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us. I'm excited, Karen, for this episode. We've already been kind of talking about some of the things we're really interested in with our guests. We'd like to welcome Yvonne Daniels to the podcast. And just a little bit about Yvonne. Yvonne is a dedicated educator and advocate for equitable education, driven by a commitment to meeting students where they are. Her career spans high school teaching, innovative curriculum development, and community leadership, marked by pioneering methods like Project-Based Algebra 1, and a mathematics dance class, which I know we're going to talk about. I'm pretty excited about that. She's also shaped educational practices as a curriculum supervisor, founded a nonprofit for underserved youth, and co-authored a series on educational disparities. Fueled by her experiences, Yvonne authored An Educator's Journey Through Failure to illustrate her journey through educational barriers, which I hope to hear about in just a few moments here. And her mission is to help dismantle barriers and create pathways for all children, ensuring they access an education aligned with their potential. Welcome to our podcast, to the podcast, Yvonne.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. Thank you again for being with us. I cannot wait to dig into some of these things, especially the educator's journey through failure. And a couple other things that we talked about. So before we begin, even though Abel just introduced you, if you could share some of your journey in education that's led you to your current work with us.
Absolutely. So I always like to start with my journey as a child. I was in foster care and then kinship, and I really failed my way through high school. I definitely had, you know, good grades because I was intelligent, but I did not, you know, I was in the social worker's office way more than I was in the classroom. So I didn't go straight to college. I ended up getting pregnant and I had to figure my life out. And so a mentor guided me back to college. I first went for social work. I thought I was going to be a social worker to save children, and I cried more than I helped anybody. So I went back to school again. And a math professor, after me kind of blowing off a math class, kind of told me I was a math genius. And I'm like, eh, who likes math? And I told him, I just want to work with kids, right? And he was like, yeah, education. And so he steered me this way. He doesn't take any credit. I got to actually work with him as a colleague recently on my work. And he's like, no, you were already headed there. I'm like, you have no idea. So that's how I got into teaching. My very first year, I really thought my team mentor was like, you know, you should get your master's and be an admin. And I was like, no, I just want to work with children. Very first year, I was at the Board of Ed screaming and yelling for children. I was down in the principal's office fighting for these two students that had transferred from Africa. They were 19 and they put them in a freshman class. So I'm screaming about like how inequitable this was. So year one, I was just disrupting. So I was like, okay, go back to school. I actually got my master's in 10 months, right? So I was really proud of that because it took me 12 years to actually get into my bachelor's of mathematics. So I feel like once I tapped in, I tapped in. So I immediately kind of just went back to school for my 6 year, and I had a great experience in the classroom, you know, 10 years. just pouring into children, sharing, pouring into me. I did a lot of community events. I was able to create my math music class. And so now here I am in admin, thinking that sitting at the table would give me a bigger chance to help children. What I found was the problems were bigger in this seat. And so recently I created a consortium, which just brought math leaders of Connecticut together from universities and districts. And so now just trying to dismantle the systems of mathematics in the U.S., not just the school or Connecticut, right? Because I think that math is this powerful that society hasn't really understood how powerful it can be. And so that's my goal. My goal is to kind of let all children and community know that math can be powerful in the many ways it's used in life that we haven't tapped into yet.
So dismantling an entity is a huge undertaking. Like, what are like the first couple of steps in your head that is to one way that people, like, they want to disrupt, they want to dismantle, that they could approach something like that?
Honestly, I think you have to build up the community around you. I think I've done a lot of great work in my teaching career, with reaching children where they're at, reaching out to my fellow teachers. So I created this tri project with a global studies teacher and an English teacher, and we made this math global study and English project be one project every quarter, and the kids got one grade for each class, right? So I think showing them that math is just a part of everywhere, that's how you dismantle the system. You knock down the narrative of math being this hard box that only some people can reach. So trying to bring this joy and this fun around, I think, is the first way. And then the second way is, again, just bringing in people. I literally just called university professors and said, can you come sit at the table with me? I'm having a hard time getting this stuff to happen. I need somebody else to say, yes, this is good mathematics. Mm-hmm. I think there's a very big disconnect between what happens in K-12 and what happens in the universities. Mm-hmm. 'Cause these professors came and they were like, they never really dove deep into these math standards, right? They were like just as surprised as everyone else at the table. So I think it's powerful when we start to open our community up and say, I don't want to dismantle, right? Miss Daniels is not trying to dismantle. Miss Daniels is trying to guide people to see it needs to be dismantled, right? And then sharing my story, because the truth is I was part of the 94% of Black women left behind in mathematics, right? Mm-hmm. Somebody had to come pick me back up. So I think my story also allows people to hear me differently, because I wasn't a good student. I didn't just go to school and then become an educator. I got here the harder way. So I get to say, no, I was a delinquent. Kids really don't react to ISS that way. Let me tell you what's really happening. So I think using my voice, so anybody who wants to dismantle, even if they don't have a story like mine, connecting with people who do will go a long way.
Thank you for that.
Yeah, the story piece is pretty big. I'm interested in knowing, like, you know, the season title of our series right now is Everyone Belongs in Math. And so I'm interested in knowing, like, how has your experience in whether you felt like you belonged in that system? And if you didn't, right, if that was the not the place that you were in your own education, how did that kind of help you to start to see that as something that's been important? And how are you working towards that in with students now that may be experiencing a similar life experience that you did?
So it's very interesting. When I wrote my book, I got a chance to reflect differently, right? Because when you're going through it, you're just moving. And so I went back and talked to professors. And I think education saves the world. And I think that's the message that I try to bridge forward. And I say to say that, like, I didn't have anybody motivating me to be great in school, right? But I did have a few teachers along the way that I can remember. I didn't remember at the time in school, right? Like I said, I didn't do well in high school, but I still today talk to my seventh grade teacher, right? Today, I can call her and say, this is what's happening. And she's gonna say, well, this is what I went through too. Like I said, my professor for math, at the university I went to, when I was having issues at like my district level, I called him and said, hey, I'm trying to get this to be approved. Can you sit at the table with me? And do you have any friends that might sit at the table with me? So I think tapping into what education did do for me is where my power lies. And so I try to do that for children. I try to, one, figure out what they want or what they don't want and why. And then how do we make math connect with that? Because I think math connects with every single thing in life, right? And so my goal is to show kids that part of it. You do belong in math. Math is a part of you because we all do math. I don't care what your career or profession is, right? And so showing them, I don't need you to get an A+ in my class. I don't need you to be the superstar or the valedictorian. What I need you to do is figure out your why and your how. And then I can connect my class to it, and then you can supersede. So even in a leadership role, I have a mentor group at the middle school. And once a week on a Tuesday, I spend 2 hours there talking to the kids in the most need, just about what do you want to do with yourself? And then I swing it back around in math. So then I become the cool lady in math, and math itself isn't that bad, right? So my goal is not necessarily to make everybody a math superstar. My goal is to say, listen, I did not feel like I belonged. School definitely pushed me out the door. When I got to college, I definitely was the only Black woman in almost every single space I was in. I am very, I'm gonna say, down to earth, right? I don't really talk the way you see someone that has a 4.0. So like, I already have like some things that the society deems as not acceptable for a scholar. And so I try to actually lean into those things so that kids know it's okay to be exactly who you are and still be super duper excellent in mathematics.
What you said is so powerful in terms of just connecting the students where they are and helping them to see that they don't have to be anything than who they are. I mean, as an adult, there's some of us still trying to figure that out, you know, in our workspaces, you know, and just being comfortable and accepted. Just being the people that we are, that's really powerful. So your recent research explores these critical intersections of math identity, classroom value, seeking to foster more equitable and supportive learning environments, especially for Black girls. How do you focus and center belonging in this work?
So it started as a journey of what I was noticing around me and me writing the book and really going through some of the experience of the Black girls I've had on my journey as an educator, right? And I think in reflecting on these things that happened to them that were systematic, it made me say, we really need to narrow in on this. And so with my journey, I think I have created a safe space for young Black girls to know that I've made it and you can too. So I try to share, and I don't share all of my story with children, right? But I do share bits and pieces so they understand that you don't have to be clean cut and have everything figured out. I do think if I say like my hair is very unique and it does make young Black girls feel accepted. I get a lot, almost every year I get some little girl at the end of the year who tells me like, this is the first time they wore their hair that way because of my hair. So I try to be very unique in my culture so that they can feel like it's okay to be unique in their culture, right? I try to show them the greatness in people so that they can know that they can be that too. The work we do, it started with me going through data, right? United States data. I wrote actually first NCSM inspiration of like how segregation is still present in math, right? Yes, in education, but in math. And you can't deny it, right? We know that you don't even have to study it. You can walk in a classroom across the US. If you walk in a Celt classroom, you know what you're going to see, right? And so my goal wasn't necessarily like more Black people in calculus or more Black girls in calculus. It was, we still need to have the option. And so how do we do that when we don't have the same access to the privilege that lies in knowing people in education, that lies in getting tutors, all those things that help you accelerate faster? So I really dug deep into the mathematics, and that's when I brought in the universities to say, like, what are the big ideas of these five classes that it takes to get to our senior year class? And so just really making a way by making the math reachable, accessible, and then adding some project base to it. So really saying like, you can have fun and still do it. We created, you know, lots of different classes that allow kids to play with math. We recently did a field trip to the fire department, right? Unique way to see math, but just trying to build experiences. I remember taking 84 kids to the math museum, then going on a waiting list. But I remember the first time I took it, the school was like, who's gonna go to a math trip? Those kids were waiting in line to go to that math trip, right? So trying to get them to play with math because the museum was hands-on, right? So the more you touch math, the more it's real. So yeah, you belong when you feel excitement. So just always focusing on how do I bring joy?
Today, I've been actually discussing about that word joy and excitement and wonder in mathematics. And we talked about how having joy just is it makes mathematics engaging for people. Even just having questions and being coming to it curious, being curious. I've done a lot of work. So I've worked a lot in AP classes in my career. And one of my idols growing up, but actually early in my career was Jaime Escalante. I saw Stand and Deliver for the first time when I was in high school, even though it was made in the 80s. I'm not that old, but I may have a gray beard, but I swear it came out when I was a little kid. But I saw it for the first time when I was in high school. And I saw it again when I was in college. And there was just something about the inspiration that Jaime Escalante had and the belief that he had in his kids that resonated with me. And so in my career, I've done a lot of work to try to build programs for AP, to get kids to AP or to get kids to calculus or statistics that start in pre-algebra or algebra one, like that would not normally have had access to that. And I remember even one year I was sitting in summer school getting kids that were, they didn't think they were going to be able to make a calculus and say, hey, just come, I'll be there. We're going to do this and we're going to get there. And we pushed them and pushed them. And this is a very heavy Latino community. So my experience has been with Latinos, because that's what my experience is in California in the valleys. But it has to do with sequencing. And I know you've done some work with math sequencing and you talked about that a little bit about not having the same access. So I'm interested in knowing like how has that work been? How have you done that work? I know it's probably different than the work that I did with kids in my community, but how has the work that you've done with math sequencing, especially for high school, to give kids access to those upper level mathematics courses, how does that increase student sense of belonging? How has that work just been successful for you? Because I'm super interested in knowing just with my...
So we haven't gone all the way through the high school from start to finish of the process. As you know, like it takes 5 years to see a full process, yeah. Right? So we're only on year three. Okay. So, but I can tell you is that, so we started, right, with adjusting our middle school. We are detract middle school, high school. We only have one of that algebra one class in eighth grade that, you know, we'll never get rid of just because of generations. But what we did was we had all of the students that are in that class also have to take a geometry enrichment course. Because if you take that algebra one in eighth grade, you miss all your eighth grade geometry parts, right? So now we make sure that those kids get those geometry parts. And what we have seen is kids would get to geometry in high school and they would drop down and say, I got to repeat algebra, because they thought they just weren't strong enough, right? Instead, what happened was you just didn't get what you needed, right? So now us giving that extra enrichment, the kids are getting there and they're no longer dropping. They're actually doubling up on their geometry and algebra too, right? Because now they're like, oh, I got everything I needed. my teacher, we also strategically put the right teacher. I'm not going to pretend that doesn't matter, because that does, right? Who does a lot of project-based, she believes in every student. And so now moving on, where I'm at, we haven't had Calc BC the whole time I was there. Now by next year, there will be a demand for it, right? We have at least 7 students I can count right now that are on that track by junior year. And I'm sure that will increase within the next 2 years. So that was one strong piece that we did, is making sure that those kids who did accelerate weren't just skipping a grade, because that, I think we have that disconnect that we think that just means honors in eighth grade, but that's not what that is, right? That's skipping a grade level. The other piece was looking at our high school. That's when I brought in the universities, because, you know, people are attached to the math they know. So that work was very different, and it did cause a lot of conversation, because people are, they know what they know. And so the universities came in, and we really pulled through to say what was needed in year one, what was needed in year two, and what can be optional for kids who want to double up to get to another path. Because the kids who want to get to calculus, they'll take 3 math classes if you let them, right? So the truth is, how do we get kids who want to be excellent but unsure if math is the path, right? We want them to stay on math without having the pressure of getting to calculus, right? So year one and two being these essential things, and then year three, they get these options of having data science, discrete math, some geometry fun, and remaining the joy of, oh, I can do this. And then maybe I can swing around and go back to calculus or statistics or something in that AP realm, right? But giving them some access differently, where right now, in most districts, your access point is Algebra 1, Geometry, Algebra 2, Pre-Calc, Calc. You need 5 years to get that access point. That doesn't really give anybody access who doesn't have the ability in their head, because I just think it's in their head, to double up. So avoiding the double up process and allowing them, instead of a 5-year plan, to be on a 4-year plan.
So you're at the district level and you just implemented major change. And so what if somebody else wanted, in the same position, district leader, wanted to implement major change in this way, what would you suggest? So like, talk about like how you even got to that point where it was accepted. Because I know there are channels that you have to go through to get things approved and
in years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You said 10 years?
No. I said in years. So it was
in years. I was saying 10 years. Wow.
So it was 3 years of the packing. I can suggest some things not to do, so it doesn't take the 3 years, but and I've done a lot of gut work. So anybody is able to have it. I am not. I just feel like everyone should be on the wave. The state I live in actually sends people to me like, hey, she's done some work. Go ask her about it, because I am very willing to share. The first answer I go back to is community. I literally send cold emails out to every math leader that was on the list in my state and said, hey, do you want to sit at the table and talk to me? I also reached out to universities. I started with the major ones, right? And then I went down to some community college. I went over to some private colleges. I just reached out. I even, there was actually someone all the way in Stanford that was talking about me on the news. And so I reached out to him. Hey, you heard you say my name on the news, right? About me dismantling mathematics. You want to come do a Zoom and talk about it? So I really just tried to reach out to anyone and everyone. I put my feelings aside. I screamed at home, right? But like in the presence, I remember one of the professors after a couple sessions, so about session 4, he says to me, I only showed up to see what you were doing to destroy math, but this is pretty cool. And I'm like, I don't care how you got here because you're here, right? So I do, I do think, I also think some of the ruckus might have helped me. Because I do think the negative news brought people in, right? Joe Bowler ended up reaching out to me because they quoted her name in some work. So I do think that you just have to be willing to take some of the ruckus because there's an other side, right? And I think sometimes when we do this work, most times when we do this work, the ruckus starts and we start to fall, right? I remember having one person at the table who said, I'm not dying on the hill for this. And my response was, oh, I only climbed up the mountain for this, honey. Right? Like, so you have to be willing to know which hill you're going to die on, because one of them's got to crack, right? There's no way you're doing dismantling change of a system, especially not in mathematics, which is thousands of years of systems, and not expect for there to be some kind of ruckus. You know, reach out to the parents who are yelling the loudest. That's what I did, right? Like, I mean, the parents who were yelling the loudest, hey, can we talk? And I didn't win them right away, but I think after two or three conversations, we are on the same page. We want the same things, right? We want our kids to have every opportunity to excel without feeling like they're going to be left behind. So how do I find what they need to match what I need and get us on the same page? So that was my advice.
And after you got everyone together, then what? Like, logistically?
We just talk. Literally just talk math. Because what you're going to find when you're at it, and I actually keep it going. So we actually meet 3 times a year now. So what you're going to find is math people crave math people to talk to anyway. So what we started with was like, what are the problems that are stopping you from changing your systems? And then most of the time we each have a different problem, but a little bit similar. And so we talk about what we each have to do, right, to get us that way. For me, my biggest thing was I need access today. I don't want to wait 7 years for kids to have opportunities. So for me, my biggest thing was I almost had to prove I was intelligent. So believe it or not, I went through 4 years of curriculum. Every single lesson, I can tell you, every single lesson in my 9th, 10th, and 11th grade curriculums completely. I went through every single standard for high school Common Core, every single middle school standard. I connected all the dots of how they applied to each other. And then I went and pulled the SATs. The new SATs doesn't have as much detail. So I had the old one that had all the standards within each domain. I aligned them with each lesson. So, I mean, I did the hardcore work of what is in your SATs, what's in your SBAC, what's in your calculus curriculums, what do universities look for? And I kind of mapped them out, right? I did some function mapping, and I put the big ideas in a cluster and reordered some classes. So that was the hard work. The hard work was making sure the math was still there. It was still very rigorous and aligned to all the things that people are concerned about, right? I took the parents and I said, what are you afraid of? Wrote all those things down and made sure that was covered. So you can't avoid the hardships in the work, right? You have to face them head on, listen to them completely, and then figure out the solution. You have to be willing to create a solution, because I think that this work gets stuck because people, they don't have all the answers. They think they need to. And so then you reach out to somebody else who might. So I think my gift has always been learning how to build my relationships. And so, you know, these universities presses, I know if I called them today and said, hey, I need to build this class now, they're going to say, all right, when do you need to, right? And they're going to make some time out. So making sure that you build relationships so that whatever you don't know, you get information for. Because I'm not going to pretend I know everything I needed to know for every single class. I didn't. I just reached out to people who could help me.
So then when it was time to get approval in your district, this GH that you wanted to make.
One step at a time. No, it was not easy. Nope, not at all. It got denied at least 6 times. I think I presented the same presentation 6 times. And again, the patience that you have to tap into, right? Like on the 6th time, I'm like, all right, we're going to go one more time. Right. And you got to, again, take all of their questions and answer them. And I got half of it approved, not the other half, but it was the half I needed to go forward. Right. So you're not going to win all the battles. So there were battles I didn't win. I didn't win everything I asked for, but I only needed certain things to get, you know, like, you're right. I didn't get the whole pop, but I got enough to open access. That's the major goal. Right. And you have to be willing to know, where are you going to sacrifice? So you put your energy where it's needed. So I definitely presented, I want to say, the whole picture, then a small picture, and then one class, right? So get one class approved, then another class approved. And to this day, I'm still being asked to present the same thing. right? It's going to continue for the people who didn't actually want to say yes, right? So they're like, what, can I ask a question? I'm like, yes, we'll do that seventh time, right? And so you have to be willing to stand there and stand on the work. So if I get to 15 times presenting the same slide, I guess 15 times it would be, because I know my mission is bigger than these questions.
So what about, we've got, you know, NCSM, we've got teachers and coaches that, like in my situation, I'm not an admin, I'm the coach. I'm the secondary math coach. Now, to be fair, I think that I hold a lot of influence. I can't make decisions, but I can influence. And so what would you recommend for those that may have some influence but have no decision-making power to help support some systemic change? Because I know that we've made changes, and between the math coaches, it's been like, man, we finally made that change after we've been saying it for 6 years. So it does take time, but we don't have as much leverage, I guess, to make the change.
So what I would say is you have to make a little bit more ruckus. So when I was a teacher, I went to the Board of Ed and I said, listen, this is what's happening. I'm gonna need you to do something. I was sitting in front of my assistant superintendent by year two of my teaching career, and had a conversation about leveling. I was disrupting from the beginning, right? So you have to be willing to disrupt. And as a teacher, I think you have to disrupt a little bit louder, right? Because you don't have that change power at the table, but you do have that change power. I was a diversity coach in my last district. I wrote that position. It was before diversity coach was a thing, right? So this was 8 years ago, before it was everywhere. I wrote the position, presented it to the board, presented it to my principal, right? Like, this is what we need so I can build a curriculum across the district in order for us to get this. So I think that you have to find where your niche is, and then you have to be really loud and uncomfortable about pushing buttons. So for you as a coach, it might be just pushing the button to the person right above you and saying, hey, can I get a meeting? Hey, can I get a meeting? It might be saying, oh, you don't want to hear me? I got to go over you, right? So like for me, I wasn't getting what I needed. So I reached out to the assistant superintendent. And of course, they ignored me at first, right? Until I went to a board meeting and spoke. Okay, let me see who this woman is, why she causing this mess, right? So like, you have to be willing to cause a little mess. Thankfully, right, students loved me. So when the mess got really big, students were like, no, we love her. And so they kind of let me keep making mess, right? But you have to be willing to get a little bit messy if you want to disrupt. And I think as a teacher, you got to be a little bit more messy, right? Because, and even as a leader, right? Every leader has someone over them making some kind of decision, right? And their math is one of those places that we're isolated when we're not together, if that makes sense, right? In most districts, you don't have a lot of leaders at the table that have experience with mathematics. So when I'm talking to the people above me, they have no idea what I'm talking about when I say there's five classes to get to that senior year class. And they're like, but they've always done it that way. And I'm like, right. But do you understand there's only 4 years in high school? Right. So like, they don't even understand, because they're like, it's always been that way. Right. And I'm like, yeah, that doesn't make it right. So they still don't know either. You have to, again, die on that hill. You got to know which mountain you want to climb. And every time somebody hits a roadblock, you go again. My principal used to say, do you hear the word no? So even the dance class, when I started creating this dance class, I just wanted to dance with I had a majorette team. I just wanted to dance with them, right? They already had like a color guard class. I wanted to do a majorette class. And she's like, Yvonne, you're a math teacher. You can't do a dance class. And I was like, So I just have to do another math class? And she said, yes. And then you have to get kids to sign up. That sounds easy. So I literally took Algebra 1, Geometry, and Algebra 2, and I made an integrated course, and I did dance routines, and I lined it to standards, and we made a dance class that also was a math class. So my girls got an integrated math credit, and they were able to get dance class. So like, I am one that doesn't like to hear no. So you tell me what I need to do, and I will research. I've learned that education will save you. I'm going to just go use that education. I'm going to pick up a book. Now we got AI. If I would have had AI in the classroom, I'd have been on a billboard. Let me tell you. But I just research, right? Like, I just, well, I find a relationship. The band teacher was my best friend. She still is. And I said, can you help me with this? And she helped me with some beat counts in order for me to mathematically sync that. And we made it work, right? I think also knowing your standards in mathematics helps. Like, who gonna argue when you know, right? When you know what you know. So trying to be the smartest person in the room, I think is all that, you know, people look down on that, but I think that that should be the goal always if you want to get work done. If you want to dismantle, you got to know the questions before they're asked.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that. I know that I'm also a board member in another district. So I totally feel you on all those. Even there are even administrators that don't, that are like, well, we've always done it that way. That doesn't make it right. So yeah, make a ruckus. That's mm-hmm. definitely
make a ruckus.
We're getting close to time here. So we're probably going to get to our last few questions. So one thing that we always ask our guests is just give one tip to leaders or coaches or teachers out there to support a sense of belonging in mathematics that's connected to all the stuff that we've talked about.
I see often on TikTok that teachers hate being asked to remember their why, but I'm going to say it again anyway.
Right.
Remember your why. And I say that someone asked me today, today was a rough day. Today was one of those battles I don't think I actually won. And my coach said to me, like, why do you come back? And I said, well, let me tell you a story. And I told her this story about a parent who thanked me after 3 years of cussing me out. Remembering your why is important. So to leaders and to educators who want to, like, push this work and find their joy, remember your why. Your why lives in your joy. It really, really does. Like, your joy is what whatever drove you here. For me, it's opening access. So every time a parent or a student says, thank you for opening my eyes to this, thank you for helping me see this way, that reminds me of why I'm here. I am here so that kids know somebody's on their side, somebody is fighting for them. So remember your why is just the most important thing you can do in education. It's especially if you're a dismantling member of the fighting people trying to get systems to crack open. You got to find your joy and your why. You got to remember. And it for everybody, I think, is different. Some people love math because they love the structure of math. So cool. Build on the structure of math. For me, it's children and access, right? So every time I create a relationship with a new child, I'm reminded of my power to help children find their way. So finding your why and connecting to your joy. And every time the system kind of beats you down or a battle you lost for the day, please go back, keep a journal. I that's why I wrote my book, right? Because I was losing a battle. And I said, oh my God, what am I gonna do next? You know what I'm gonna do? I'm gonna use my voice and share my story, right? And so, like, keeping a journal, even if you don't turn it into a book, is a powerful thing. That book is my journal. I literally am just telling you my journey and reminding myself my why, my joy. Oh yeah, this is why I keep going. And then this happened. I literally have ADHD in the book. It's like, then this happened. Oh my God. And so finding your joy is so important and connecting it to your why.
I'm just thinking about that and how that phrase, finding your why lives in your joy, like, just really, really, really touched me in a different way. That's just making me be really reflective on my why and the joy that I find. Before we got on the call, we were talking about my journey into education and how I haven't looked back since, and how that passion, my two friends, Larry and Sean, were talking about their inorganic chem class, and they were so passionate about it. And I don't know that they know to this day that they helped me realize that that's what I did not want to do because I didn't have that passion. And this class that I took called The Craft of Teaching, and just learning about the inequities in education and inequities that happened to friends of mine that I didn't realize was happening, or even like my experience was very different than my sister's experience. And that's when I discovered like this passion that I had and that has driven me and why I haven't turned away from education since, because it does beat you down and it does beat you up. And especially in mathematics, when we're constantly competing against other things, I'm not going to name the sister content area, but we know what it is. And we're constantly fighting that battle to just to have our own, to have equal time, to, you know, to, it's just as important, you know, like the world literally spins on mathematics. So, yeah, and that, and it's just so important. And if we help students to find that and identify that in our math classrooms, then how much more will they feel a part of it? And how much more will they feel like they have that sense of belonging when they're in there? So thank you so much for everything that you shared today, your experiences, just so rich, so much depth to everything. I have a lot more questions, but we just don't have time.
And I'd like to say thank you for that. Go ahead, sorry.
I was going to say, we do have more podcasts, Karen.
All right. I do want to say thank you, though. I love being able to share because I think I like giving hope even to adults, right? I love giving joy to children. But you're not alone in this journey. And sometimes we feel that way. And that's why I created the consortium, right? Like, please come sit at the table with me. But yeah, it's always great to be able to share, even if it's a tiny piece of my story or the journey or, you know, our love together for math. I love being able to share.
So how can people get in contact with you if they want to learn more about what you do, just learn more about how they can dismantle and hear a little bit more about your story?
You can contact me. All my info, I think the easiest way is for me to say my name, YvonneDaniels.com. That's probably the easiest way for people to remember. And all my information is up there. I am always willing to talk and share because I think this work is bigger than just you and me. And the only way it's going to grow is if we spread the word. So YvonneDaniels.com. Please, please, please reach out to me. My phone number is actually publicly everywhere because I used to run a salon. So you could just pick up my number from the site and call me. I know, like, that's, nobody wants to say that, but that's what the truth is, right? Like, you know, somebody recently, 2 weeks ago, reached out to me and asked to do brunch. And I'm like, sure, right? As long as we meet in a public place, who cares? And we did. We had a great conversation and I helped them solve some problems, I hope. But you're not alone on this journey, and I am definitely in it to help the world see that mathematics is great. So together we are.
Nice.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, and we appreciate your time. And thank you, everybody, for listening. We hope you come back next month. Thank you, everybody.
We hope that you have been inspired by this bold mathematics leadership conversation, and we'll tune in to our podcast series each month. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with others, post about it on social media, or leave a rating and review. You can learn more about NCSM Leadership and Mathematics Education and our upcoming professional learning events on the NCSM website, mathedleadership.com. You can also follow NCSM on the X at MathEdLeaders and using the hashtag NCSMBold. Until next time.